He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys. And I have a question.
Let's start out with it.
All right. So I'm driving. It's an interesting weather-wise day. Anyway, I'm on my way to the station today. I'm coming down into Sharon, which is what's the opposite of an incline?
Decline.
Right. Well, and somebody with a snowplow and truck or whatever is barreling up sort of in the middle of the road. So I'm kind of on a decline, not at, slow, and I get one of my tires hits an icy patch. And I tried to remember from Car Keys the other week, don't look at what you think you're going to. I nothing terrible happened.
What is the question?
What do you do when that happens?
You roll
other than
over
pray?
It. You, my,
no, I didn't stop. I went over it.
This would be a two-pronged answer because I'll answer and then Jay will answer. Okay. We'll see where we disagree and agree. If you don't have a problem having to avoid something, I would go straight over the ice patch, not apply a heavy brake, if a brake at all, and get over to the other side. Because you do not want to lock your brakes up, even with anti-lock braking, and start possibly a skid situation in your car.
Okay?
That's my simplistic answer.
Right, but it wasn't an option to hit the brakes or not. It was simply my tire hit ice. I started to slide. When you start to slide, what do you do, dear?
Well, I don't think you'd start to slide if one tire out of four hit the ice.
Then two tires hit. The point is that I was in a place where the truck coming towards
me. Whatever you did, you kind of did the right thing because we're talking right now and you seem to be fine. So,
as is my car, but I'm just.
So what did you do? Tell us what you did.
I didn't look at a tree or the side of the road where I.
Well, how much of a slide did you get into?
Obviously not enough to trash my car or the
And it was
plow.
Done before you finished asking the question. In other words, like, what, a second or 2 seconds?
I absolutely couldn't tell you. Absolutely no idea. I just wondered.
Okay.
It just made
me
think,
worst,
like, what do you do?
Ice is the worst, obviously, of all conditions because it is where you have the least friction. It is also sometimes the hardest to see. Like last night, there were places when it started raining places that had been recently plowed all of a sudden turned to black ice. It was treacherous.
Yeah.
And when you walk out the door in the morning, if your driveway is a sheet of ice, it should send signal to your brain that, the roads are going to be very, very slippery. In some parts, trucks have gone by, roads have been salted, sanded, whatever, and things are fine. But if and when you do hit a slippery spot and ice is the worst of those, you want to try to steer the car as smoothly as possible and very little
reaction. Except for the car. You don't want to be
you want to steer it very gently. Soft hands is what I always talk about in driving. And look where you want to go and just point the car there. And over ice, there is really not a lot you can do but just steer the car and hope that it will actually go where you're steering it.
This is where a heavyweight car can work against you more than a lightweight car, depending on because of the momentum that the weight causes the car to project itself forward in or not slow down as well or not turn as well as a lighter car might do it. On the other hand, Jay might say, well, the lighter the car, the less weight there is on the road, and maybe you'd slide as easily. I don't know. What do you think about a smaller car versus a heavy car? Not much difference, but there is a little bit.
Some light cars have advantages. A big truck that's, a plow truck that's loaded with 5 tons of sand seems to stick pretty well to the road. So I don't know. But what I would say, when I drive, when I get worried if conditions are changing or when I get on the road and conditions are slippery, or for some reason, like I said, they're changing, and I'm not sure what they're going to be, I slow down.
Absolutely.
And I slam on, I will test the conditions. I will slam on the brakes. If I think there may be black ice, I've come to the side of the road, open the door, pull out, and just walk around and look. Walk in the middle of the road and feel how it is. You know, obviously you can't do that on a major highway, but usually major highways are well salted, well sanded. But if you're alone at night, you know, just stop.
Last night's weather conditions were extreme in that the rain was very heavy. Even if they had put stuff down on hills, on inclined roads, when the rain is pouring off the side of a hillside and maybe onto the road, there's a back road called, ironically, Sand Road in Canaan, and it has very poor draining capabilities on it, and it pools up a lot on the sides, on the pavement that you're actually driving on. There can be great pools of water as big as our broadcast booth room, which is not very big, but I would say it's 7 by 12, and it can be longer, and you cannot get you cannot avoid going through them with one side of your car, if not both sides of your car in places. And that does not necessarily speak well about sanding and salting situations, because the water could wash that off if there was any flowage going on the road. But Jay's right. It's black ice. You cannot see. I think getting out of your car is one way to test that particular area of road that you may have stopped your car on, but it may not do a whole lot for the general length of the trip you're on. So we have a place called Barak Matif Mountain there, the S-curves between Salisbury and Salisbury School, which is a very dangerous place because it doesn't get any sun in the afternoon. And last night, I do know that one of my tires hit an icy spot on it. There was a little shutter of the car, but there was not ice all the way across. But I noted it, and I was going slower. But as Jay says, the best defense is speed, and proper speed on the roads at all times when there's ice around.
And also the gentleman, and point yourself where you think you
ahead of where you want to even start, I think. Because you really don't want to make a sharp, sudden turn of the steering wheel trying to avoid sliding. If you've started to do a slide, the natural tendency is to jerk the wheel to take yourself out of it, and that may not do you
be helpful.
Yeah, if you jerk the wheel, you're gonna break the friction,
right?
The little friction you have, and once you've lost friction, you're not getting it back. And that's the typical thing people, will do is the car is not turning and they turn the wheel more. And the more you turn the wheel, the less the car is going to turn.
Correct.
Thank you very much. And I was just going slowly because I had come round and down and had already seen the school bus.
Well, one of the places on your particular road where you live on is that little bridge just before, is it Cream Hill intersects with...
Yes, but that wasn't bad. What was interestingly terrible this morning going down was as the spot between River Road, well past that, there is another decline. For some reason, while at the top of the hill, it was okay. It was just a luge run there.
Right. Well, that's the way because the ground is frozen, and the water coming off any hillside is not going anywhere but out onto the road pavement. And so there are a lot of deluges last night in the rain. So let's move on to road tests. I happen to have done tests of two different vehicles this weekend, courtesy of our local Northwest Hills dealership, which covers Jeeps, Chevrolets, Cadillacs in Tarrant, Connecticut. And I went to both sides of the dealership. I was in the Jeep, in the Chevy dealership side first, where I was able to get I engaged a salesperson there named Tom, and actually I got more into thinking about whether I might buy one, which for listeners who have been listening to me say,
that's
don't
amazing.
Buy an all-electric car because of range, the Bolt is, I will tell you, the Bolt is something that made me think quite seriously about possibly getting one as a second car because it is a marvelous car. Jay wants to ask questions and I'll answer them.
Well, I obviously
you've been talking about it.
I've been talking about it
for
a lot.
Months.
And Robin beat me to test driving it, and kudos to him. So give us our general, what's your general impression?
My general impression is it is a superb example of a perfectly functionally usable all-electric vehicle for mostly local driving, but it's got adequate range, meaning the sticker range is 238 miles, I think, average. I don't know whether that is using heat and lights and all that or not, but Automobile Magazine editor, editorial on it, I guess, Jamie Kittman, was it, Jay, wrote up a very good, this is sort of what got me going on Sunday. It doesn't matter. But Jamie Kittman wrote up a very good review of it in his opinion and said he got 268 miles, I think, or something out of the range that it's meant to have 238. And I don't think he ran out of juice at that point.
Is it a plug-in?
Electricity. No, it's a plug-in.
Okay.
And but
yeah,
it's a
pure electric.
Right. There's no gasoline backup.
I just think it's worth emphasizing as you.
So how long does it take to recharge the car once you?
Well, you can buy it with two different charging packages. The standard charging package basically is not a quick charging package, and it's a plug-in electronic module that is a $800 roughly extra cost item if you are ordering of a Bolt.
And does it have to be installed in your?
No, the dealership can install it if you happen to find one on a dealership lot that doesn't have it with it. It is a dealer installable option if it did not come ordered from the factory with this the quick charging package. And the quick charging package is probably a computer program that allows the electricity, allows a higher rate of electricity to go into the batteries and therefore charge it much quicker than the regular, which takes overnight to recharge a Bolt when it's pretty much depleted.
And I'm just sorry to be unclear, but what do you plug it into?
Well, you can plug it into your regular 110-volt outlet in your house for the regular charging package if you get the...
And it will recharge overnight, right?
And it will recharge overnight.
Okay.
If you if you install a charging station in your garage, it is probably a 240-volt installation. You can charge, I believe it, fully charge it in 4 hours.
So how do you play, just say...
And that comes with a charging cord, a plug-in cord, which goes into the car and into the charging station or into an extension cord if you've got the regular cord.
All right, so let's say it's last night, just out of curiosity. Let's say it's last night, it's dumping rain, and you don't have, I'm lucky enough to have a garage with an outlet in it. If you park your car outside your house,
okay.
You buy an extension cord. It'll be easier to recharge a car overnight than trying to find gas in our neck of the woods overnight.
Let's get back to the car. We don't talk about charging for 10 minutes. The car itself was quick. It's quiet. The quality of materials in the car were terrific. I did not have the top-of-the-line model, which would have had a fully leather seating package interior, plus a few other technical things like stop-start and the cruise control safety. It was a complete, accident avoidance package, I guess you'd call it. Visibility was delightfully good because it's a fairly square vehicle so that you have reasonably good glass sizes in the side windows and out the rear.
Did you try to sit in the rear seat?
I went and sat in the rear seat while the salesperson was in getting the plate to put on the car to go. And I do not remember where the front seat was positioned, but I sat behind the driver's seat, and there was adequate room for me to sit in that rear seat. I'm 5'10". 6'5" might have had a little more difficulty. If you have a tall person who has in the front and the seat is back, you may have trouble with anybody with legs in the back seat. But I didn't adjust the front seat to see just how much leg room you lost with the seat in the full back position versus where it was set for me to drive it. And I was not in the back position. I wouldn't have been able to reach the pedals very well. But I took the short test drive version of a test drive, which is you go right out of a dealership, you go right at the, if not the first right you can take within two or three options, and you keep going right until you come back to the dealership parking lot, which took all of less than 15 minutes. But it did take me on back roads as well as on, it's 272, I think it is, or that goes towards Canton from the dealership. Let me tell you, the ride was very comfortable. It is very firm. There's not much leaning of the body when you're going around sharp turns, which I experienced on a couple of the side roads I ended up on. I missed one turn, so I got a little extra time on a smaller side road, which had some potholes in it. While I avoided the potholes, there were other bumpy portions of it, which made me feel the seats were very comfortable and helped the suspension absorb bumps as well. So there wasn't really a shocking ride feeling to some car, to this car, as you can find in some other cars. But overall, I was so impressed with it, I actually spec'd out one and went through the motions of possibly thinking about purchasing one. And it turns out that General Motors does not give you 0% financing on the Bolt. It's 3.9% for up to 60 months.
What's the price of a Bolt?
The price of a Bolt, I would say that there were three Bolts at this dealership, and they ranged in list sticker price from $39,000 and change to $43,000 and change. And they had a variety of packages. None of them was absolutely a stripped version, which I think it is $37,000.
So your spec, how much was your spec?
$39,000 and change it was spec'd.
Okay. And then out the door, what?
Out the door, there were rebates and there were incentives, and out the door was going to be something like $5,200 off the sticker because it was a leftover 17, and out the door it was 39 less 5 is $32,000 and change. But there are other incentives. If you were in the military, there was, an additional $500 credit. If you were a business owner,
so you were basically 34 plus tax.
Yeah,
I go
and
back.
And then there's a federal tax credit of $7,500 on the car for those who can use it. I know nothing about those tax credit benefits. So at some point, you could get it down to where the net cost might have effectively been $25,000. To you, which makes the Bolt a very good value dollar-wise. It was really tight. Has an 8-year, 100,000-mile battery life to it, which, given the experience of other cars with these same battery warranties, is pretty safe to say that the batteries are not the problem, are not a problem for these cars from the standpoint of wearing out either before the warranty's out or even after the warranty period has expired, mileage-wise or year-wise, because I know very few Prius owners, many of whom have 150,000 miles or more on their older Priuses, that have yet to have a battery replacement.
So I've got two quick questions, which you may or may not choose to answer. At the 7,500, if you're out the door at 35,
you don't get the 7,500 off the price. You have to apply to your
it's okay. A tax credit.
It's
refer
tax
to your
credit.
Okay. Refer to your accountant. Never mind.
Refer to your accountant.
And
so, what I'd like to say is, first of all, Robin and I have talked about this before coming here, they are, I guess, Chevy is giving great deals on Bolts, and it's kind of surprising because it's a new vehicle. They've sold quite well. I think they sold last year in 2017, which was their first year of selling the Bolt, 36,000 cars. And that seems like very few cars, but you have to put that compared to the 450,000 orders that are still waiting on the Tesla 3. But
here's
put that
in
perspective, Tesla sells 60,000 Model S's. And what I'd like to say is, you can buy a Chevy Bolt now, even if you want a Model 3 Tesla, because you probably can put 100,000 miles before you can get your hands on
the Model 30.
On a Model 3 Tesla.
Allegedly around $500,000.
Also,
500,000 offers waiting in line.
There's a bigger question is, why don't we see more Bolts? And why isn't General Motors promoting the Bolt more?
There's a range perception problem, and we've talked about this, and I've actually made a big point about it. If you are a driver, for example, I could have my boat fully charged and I could go to New York and back. I could go to Boston and not back. And I could go to Albany and back, and I could go to Hartford and back.
Can you get to Westport Harbor?
We agree on the range. I really don't think, personally, I don't think the range is a perception.
It's an over-exaggerated problem, I think.
I don't think the problem is there. I think the problem is simply that General Motors is making the decision not to promote that vehicle.
They have.
When's the last time you saw an ad for a Bolt? And look at the number of ads you see for Chevy trucks. And there's an argument made by Jamie Kittman in Automobile Magazine about the fact that GM is maybe missing out on the opportunity to do what Toyota did with the Prius, where arguably they also sold a bunch of cars and not made any money on it, but the Prius in itself was setting an image for Toyota.
I think the Prius is making money. They sell many thousands more.
They do now. The idea was
where you started out.
But they're not charging. They're not selling the Prius electric, pure electric in the thousands. They're selling the hybrids,
hybrid.
And the hybrids are known. You don't have a range problem with the hybrids because they have the gasoline engine that takes over any time the battery is down, depleted down to where it can't drive the car.
So essentially what it sounds as though the argument in Automotive Magazine, if that's the correct magazine,
Automobile Magazine,
is that GM has an opportunity to be, to own, quote, the pure electric.
Well, the Nissan Leaf is a pure electric, and they're not selling the whole lot either.
Well, they do have a range problem, and which is a whole totally different story.
But the new
Volkswagen
ones are going
with the Golf and the Nissan Leaf both had in their first models, I think, somewhere around 80 miles range, and they're maybe around 100 now, or 120. But they're still nowhere near that 200-plus range.
Until you get over 200, I think there's really a range problem with the pure electrics.
Which is what you have been saying over time. So you found a pure –
I found a pure electric that is actually quite usable for within 200 miles of your point of departure, assuming you're fully charged. And to their merit, you can go to Hartford and plug it in while you're in – having lunch or something, and you're going to have plenty of range back, and the same as in New York. So it's not like there's a problem with finding plug-in places. Catamount Ski Area here in Hillsdale has got an electric plugs in. Who else has got plugging places for electric cars? They are showing up. So it's not necessarily something that is as much of a problem as it might have been a year or even two years or even a year ago. And I would suspect that every month there are a few more plug-in stations that are showing up at various places, maybe not where you may be driving, but where a lot of people are likely to drive. And we're not going to get to the second test. We'll do that next week. And for Jeep fans who are listening to this show, it'll be all about the new mostly aluminum Jeep Wrangler, which in one word until next week is sensational.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.